offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Hari from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. We're in the middle of the 10th discourse in the series of 1991 summer course. This was the discourse Swami delivered on the 31st of May. And we're somewhere midway in that discourse, as we said that this is a very beautiful discourse on the nature of God, His relationship with creation, the three names that God is given, and the three states that we experience in everyday life, the wakeful state, the dream state, and the deep sleep, and how it correlates to these different names and these different approaches to that same divinity is what this discourse is all about. Like all other discourses of Swami, a very, very beautiful and very profound discourse. Before we go into what Swami said last, as we left you off last week, and to go further into the discourse, I invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem.
I think last week we stopped at that interesting point where Swami was talking about what differentiates reality from the dream. And in a way that is also a sign to us as what we need to give importance to in the waking state. When Swami spoke about time, task, cause and duty.
Right.
Or as it would be told in Sanskrit, it's kala, karma, karana and kartavyam. Where Swami was saying that in the wakeful state there is a continuity. Even if it is broken by a short stint of sleep and a dream state, there's always a certain continuity. You come back to that, you know where you started from, you know where you're going within the waking state, not in the ultimate sense, but you know what you're doing something for. You know the cause behind whatever you're doing. And I think Swami gave that example of you traveling to a different city. Like if you're going to Delhi, Swami said that there is a reason why you're going there, and that becomes karana. You do the act of going to the airport or boarding the flight or whatever, and that becomes the action that you do. And there is a time which is spent. It takes a certain amount of time from going from point A to point B. And that time is, you live through that time. So you know that it has taken 4 hours or 3 hours or whatever it is. And then Swami said there is a duty that you have to do through this whole thing, which gives you a sense of reality in each one of these steps. And all of these are missing in a dream state, where when you're in a dream, Swami says, just ask yourself, where did this scene begin? Or what are you going to a certain place you're going to in a dream? And you would see that all of these are cannot be answered. And that's why the dream is unreal and the real is different.
Yeah, one, like I was thinking about this distinction between what we experience as a waking reality and what is, in a sense, a dream reality. So what is common to both of them is the experience of the identity. Like we don't experience ourselves as being any different from, you know, even the characters whom we meet. Like if you meet a friend of yours in the dream, the characteristics, personality of that person is pretty much the same as what you experience that person in your daily life. So it is like the brain is, you know, taking impressions from our everyday this thing and creating that, you know, a dream out of that. Right. However, it there's a more of a sense of being a witness rather than being an actual, you know, somebody is intending to do something. It's like even when you watch, it's just that you're watching yourself do something. So the proportion of witness in that is far more. There's very little intention in a dream, right? Whereas in the waking reality, what we experience is more of being intentional in our actions and less of being a witness. So, like, you know, it goes all the way till, you know, when you go to the final state of the Turiya state, sorry, the Sushupti state. At that state, like, there, it's almost everything is witness, right? There is, so, or rather, all intention and again, all witness, it all comes together there. But in the waking state, there's very little of intention that is present.
Right. And, I mean, that's the thing about the dream itself. Many times you would see that, you know, if you're in a certain situation, you would imagine in the waking state that I will act like this or I will do like this. But sometimes when that same situation is played out in the dream, you will do actually what you would do.
Right.
Really, you know, if you're scared, you will sense that fear in your dream.
Right.
You know, if there is a anger towards any person, you will sense it.
Yeah.
In the waking state, you might curb that intention, you know, that emotion. Mm. You might mask it with a little more of a culture of discrimination. But you would see that you really do what you would do in your dream.
Correct.
And I think this morning also I was talking about that on one of the shows. Swami speaks in the Prashnotra Vahini about the subtle body, you know, the Sukshma Sharira, and the dual role that it plays, and how it changes in the waking state and in the dream state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in the 1993, Samukho Swami had spoken about it. Mm-hmm. He said, in the waking state, the Sukshma Sharira is basically your emotions, your thoughts, your angers, your fears, everything. Everything that animates the physical body constitute the Sukshma Sharira.
Okay.
But he says, when you go into a sleep, when you go into sleep and when you start dreaming, Swami says all of these withdraws from the physical body, and like we had seen in the previous discourse, the prana is allowed to function as the five fires which are all the time burning. But this Sukshma Sharira, which is in the waking state, was a conglomeration of all your emotions, now joins that Sukshma Sharira, which actually travels from body to body over birth and death.
Okay.
So that is why in dreams sometimes you see things which is more than what you have seen in your wakeful state.
Right.
You start seeing, you know, some connections to something what you're going through. So Swami says that, you know, in the dream state, you have completely detached from the waking state, which means all the limitations which the waking state has also been removed.
Mm.
So now you have this Sukshma Sharira, which is like literally robust with all its memories from the past as well as in the present life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the dreams are, you know, I think even Pradeep sir was telling, it's not merely what you've seen in the day when you're awake.
Correct.
There's so many things that you don't really understand why it happens.
So the impressions like from your past lives and like what is going on currently.
Mm.
So they all like form part or the basis of what you see in the dream.
If
I understand correctly. So that is a very important point what you mentioned. We discussed this the last time also, that in the dream state, you know, there is very little of structure. Things can happen which wouldn't, you know, you might see yourself flying, for example, which in the physical world may not happen, right? You see yourself doing things which you're not capable of in the conscious, when you're conscious, right? And that is a very important distinction that Swami creates over here. He says that the physical world has this structure which is fourfold. You got time, you got task, you got your cause and your duty. And that I think is very, very vital for us to understand. That I think this we discussed the last time, that the divinity that is innate in all of us, it has to kind of follow these rules when in the physical world. Right? Those are not to say limitations, but that's those are the parameters within which the physical world actually works.
Mm.
And that's what we were, like, even if you look at Swami, right? Somebody was pointing out, he's not a devotee, but he was saying, I just admire the fact that when I listen to devotees, I realize that Swami has been basically following almost the same schedule of coming out for darshan every day, giving interviews, bhajans, right? This same kind of schedule he's been following for nearly his entire life. Right? And he says that kind of commitment itself to me is divinity.
Mm.
Right, and so you could see in Swami that sense of duty. Correct, no? And I mean, even though as Lord Krishna would say that in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that in all the three worlds, there's no action that he's obligated to perform. Mm. But if you looked at Swami, he would be an inspiration for all of us as to what the sense of duty is. Even when he was physically, he was very ill-disposed, even then he would do his utmost. And we can all recall those times when he would stand up to give a discourse, even when his legs would not support him with that much strength, right? Because I remember in the earlier years, Swami would say, you know, that while giving a discourse, why is it that I stand? Because it is my duty to do so. And we could see, you know, Swami was straining to do that. Like no matter what the limitations of the physical body at that time were, he was still straining to do his duty.
Mm.
You know, it would take a lot of persuasion at that time to have Swami sit on the chair. Right? So for Swami, that's why the duty was one of the most important things. You know, one of the officials in this ashram, very highly respected and also very close to Swami. And I've seen that the secret in one of the things that Swami used to appreciate or like a lot in people is that kartavya nishtha, means that they are stickler to duty.
Right.
And that was a value that Swami used to give a lot of importance to. And this particular official or devotee used to serve Swami, somebody once told me about this, that how he would follow Swami's instruction to the letter. So Swami said, like, today I want you to go to, say, West Block, room number, say, B20, okay, and deliver this letter. Then go to, say, South Block, B1, right, and deliver this prasadam. Now go to West Block, B21, right, the very next room to the first room. Go there and convey to this person the following message, right? So many of us would rationalize that here's 20 and 21 next to each
finish
other.
Finish the work together.
Yeah, let's optimize and finish the work there. But he would go down to that. Swami has an intention that why I must do this, you know, these tasks in that order, 1, 2, 3 instead of 1, 3 and 2. And he would follow it to the T, you know, his instructions. So that kind of duty boundedness, right? And that came from where? That training came from Bhagwan himself. And that's why Swami is very clear, this kala. Again, when you see the highlight of any Satya Sai organization activity is the fact that it starts on time. You know, if the bhajan is supposed to start at 5:30 at any Sai center, it starts at 5:30, no matter the prime singers or whoever are not available, it will start. Musicians are not around, doesn't matter, it starts, right? Because that is the kind of, you know, the adherence to time,
right?
Which Swami used to teach. I remember that somebody used to make a statement about the Satya Sai University, that it is the one university that from like years and years and years, or even the school, you know, they're so time, I mean, schedule bound, like, so March 31st or, you know, that the date when they say the
exams,
it closes on that day. If they've announced that the exams are on so and so date, no matter what happens, the exams take place in between those dates. So there's complete certainty about how the university or the school functions, between what dates, right? And the same, you know, goes for many of our the institutions that works over here, like, so very systematic when it comes to time, right? And yeah, so that's why I thought, like, Swami, the way he highlights these, the fact that when you are in the physical world, you are, these are the parameters that you must respect, that is time, task, the cause, right? The karana. There is a causal principle that is active in this planet, right? In this physical plane. And physicists like to call it the arrow of time. You know, time follows a particular sequence.
Okay.
Like, for example, you will say, supposing you have something fragile, like a porcelain jug in your hand. You drop it, it breaks, right? And that is very completely natural for you, because that is the flow of the events. You would never ever see a broken jug come together and, you know, form a very nice ornate jug. You'd never see that reverse process happening, because time has an arrow, and that's why the causal principle is also something that is very, very real in this world. So Swami identifies cause also as one very important parameter in the physical world.
Right. I think the takeaway from that part is, you know, when I think that's why Swami is making this correlation between the deep sleep state and the dream state and all of this. We might, with our understanding, say that, okay, we are beyond the body, we are after all spiritual,
yes,
and think that we are beyond the bounds of these four factors which Swami speaks about. But here Swami is saying, and Swami did, as you were explaining, throughout his life, that even when that super causal or mahakarana or whatever you call that, or avyakrita as Swami named it, even when that comes in this plane, when it comes into the physical realm, it needs to follow these things.
Correct.
So that is a message to you and me, that, you know, being in this plane, however spiritual you may become, you don't you know, outgrow these, you know, these limits.
Right.
In fact, I think we mentioned this before when Swami had been to East Africa. Swami did not take Mother Isharama with him.
Hmm.
So he made Mother Isharama stay in Mr. Jawa's house in Bombay.
Hmm.
Right. So when we were talking to Mr. Jawa's daughter, Ms. Rani Jawa, she was telling that period when Isharama was there in their house, she saw how dutiful a son Swami was.
Hmm.
You know, in spite of who Swami really is, she said that the duty of a son to the letter Swami following, because she would say that almost every other day, Swami would call all the way from Africa to the mother, to speak to the mother and tell her that, you know, I'm fine, this is what we did, we went here, a lot of devotees are here. And she said, you know, just being with Swami, she imbibed that quality from Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So when she would spend many months in Prashantanilayam of Vrindavan, Swami would permit her, she would make it a point to call up her father and mother. And there would be her siblings who are living in the same city who might not do that.
Right.
And she said, I learned that. I mean, that's a very revealing thing. Swami never had to do that. Because we know that the whole journey started off by Swami saying, I don't belong to you. You know, you no more can bind me with your relationship and all of that. But still Swami said, you know, these are the duties that a son has to follow. And there is detachment, but the kartavyam or the duty part has to be performed.
Right.
And so I think shall we go to the next clip in that discourse?
Yes.
Deshamanta, kalamato, karmanato, kartavyamato kudinatuntivi.
The desha, the country, is full of the time, the reason, and the responsibility.
Kalamato kudinatvante kayamu.
The body is related to
karmanato cheyinatvante kayamu.
The body is meant for action.
Kanukane kayamunu sarthakam cheskovalanna pavitra karmanu acharinchi kalamunu manu sadvinyogam cheskovali.
To make this body sacred, we should spend the time while undertaking sacred actions.
Karmanubandhini manushyaloki. Ee manushyalokamantakunu karma cheta kattabadinatundi.
The human world is bound by action.
Karma cheyaka ee okka vyaktikudunu kshanamaina undadaniki veelu kaadu.
No man can exist for a moment without doing any action.
Karmanaga karacharanaadi avayavumulate cheseetundi pannu anukuntunnam.
Action is generally mean by one done with all the limbs.
Kaadu kaadu. Anni karmale.
Certainly not. All our actions.
Oka chinna udaharanam.
A small example.
Atanu em chestunnadu ante.
What is he doing?
Emi cheyatam ledu.
He is not doing anything.
Emi cheyaki em chestunnadu.
Without doing anything, what else is doing?
Nidristunnadu.
He is sleeping.
Emi cheyaki nidristunnadu. Emi cheyaki em pani chestunnadu nidristu. Aa nidristunnadu anedi kuda oka karmale.
Without doing anything, we say that he is sleeping. Even that sleep is an action.
Yeni cheyaki em chestunnadu kurchunnadu.
Without doing anything, he simply sat down.
Kurchovatam kuda karmane.
Even sitting is also an action.
Inka sukshmaga manam vicharana selipinappudu,
when we inquire,
manam vishwasam vishwasamulu vidistunnam.
We inhale and exhale.
Ikanta karma yokka prabhavame.
That is the effect of action.
Mana desham lopala manaku teliyakunda kadade ee oka circulation, anaga blood circulation jarugutu untundadi.
Without our knowledge, there is continuous blood circulation in our body.
Karmane.
All this is action.
Ye prayatnam lekapoyinappatikini mana gunda kottukuntune untundadi.
Without any effort, our heart beats.
Idanta karmane.
This is all action.
Konni prayatnamto jarigetuntivi, konni apriyatnanga jarigetuntivi.
Certain things are done without effort, certain things without effort.
Konni karmalaku neevu prayatnapurvakanga dani praveshistunnavu.
You enter into action with all your effort.
Konni prayatnamulu yekka din lekapoyinappatikini karmalu sarigipothunnai.
Actions go on as it is, effortless.
Neevu maatladutundu.
You speak.
Nidristundu.
Sleep.
Jagadam estundu.
You quarrel.
Sokistundu.
You grieve.
Aanandanga navutundu.
You smile.
Ee pani chestunnappatikini nee kosam ee swasa uchvasa nishwasamulu kaachukovatam ledu. Tama panulu taamu jarugutune untunnayi.
The inhalation and exhalation do not wait for you. They go on continuously.
Ee prayatnam chestunnadu manavudu.
What effort man is undertaking.
గుండె కొట్టుకోవటానికి ఏ ప్రయత్నం చేస్తున్నాడు మానవుడు?
ఫర్ హార్ట్ బీట్ వాట్ ఎఫర్ట్.
ఏ అవస్థలు ఎందు ఉండినప్పటికీ తన పని తాను చేస్తూనే ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇన్ వాట్ ఎవర్ స్టేట్ మే బి, ఇట్ డస్ ఇట్స్ ఓన్ అకార్డ్.
ఇది ఏ ఆది దైవికము అని పేరు.
దిస్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ ఆది దైవికము.
ఆది భౌతికము అని దేహంతో కూడినటువంటిది.
ఆది భౌతికము రిలేట్స్ టు ది బాడీ.
ఆధ్యాత్మికము అనేటువంటిది మనస్సుతో కూడినటువంటిది.
ఆధ్యాత్మికము రిలేట్స్ టు ది మైండ్.
ఆది దైవికమే ఒక దివ్య శక్తితో చేరినటువంటిది.
ఆది దైవికము హ్యాస్ గాట్ ద డివైన్ పవర్.
ఆది భౌతికము, ఆధ్యాత్మికము, ఆది దైవికము, ఈ మూడింటి యొక్క తత్వమే విరాట స్వరూపుడు.
ఆది భౌతికము, ఆది ఆధ్యాత్మికము, ఆది దైవికము,
దగ్గుడు, అవ్యాకృతుడు. ఈ ముగ్గురు కూడాను ఒక్కొక్క కాలమునందు ఒక్కొక్క స్థితి అనుభవించి ఒక్కొక్క పేరుతో ఒక్కొక్క విధమైనటువంటి కర్మలు ఆచరిస్తున్నారు.
ఆల్ ది త్రీ ఇన్ త్రీ డిఫరెంట్ స్టేట్స్ దే ఎంజాయ్ ఇన్ త్రీ లెవెల్స్.
ఈ అన్నింటికి ఉండినటువంటి అంతరార్థము, అంతర్రహస్యము గుర్తించినటువంటి వారు కనుకనే ఋషులందరూ కూడాను సర్వసంగ పరిత్యాగులై నిజమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మానందమును పొందుటకై ప్రయత్నిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
హావింగ్ అండర్స్టూడ్ ది ఇన్నర్ సిగ్నిఫికెన్స్ అండ్ ఇన్నర్ సీక్రెట్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ త్రీ స్టేట్స్,
పెట్టినటువంటి పేర్లకు అర్థము తెలియకపోవటం చేత హాస్యాస్పదమైనటువంటి జీవితం గడుపుతున్నారు.
బికాస్ వీ డోంట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ వర్డ్స్ వీ మేక్ ఫన్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్.
ఇప్పుడు ఒక వేదములో చంద్రమా మనసోజాత, చక్షో సూర్యో అజాయత, ముఖ ఇంద్రశ్చ అగ్నిశ్చ అని ఒక పాఠం ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇన్ వేద దేర్ ఇస్ ఎ లెసన్ సచ్ యాజ్ ద వన్ దట్ స్వామి సేడ్, చంద్రమా మనసోజాత,
చంద్రమా మనసోజాత, చంద్రుడుంటున్నాడు.
దేర్ ఇస్ మూన్.
ఎవరి చంద్రుడు?
హూ ఇస్ దిస్ మూన్?
మనం లౌకికమైనటువంటి యొక్క భౌతికమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఈ సైన్స్ లో విచారణ చేసినప్పుడు చంద్రుడు అనేటువంటి వాడు ఒకడుంటున్నాడు, చంద్రమండలానికి వెళ్లి వస్తున్నారు, అక్కడ ఏమీ దేవుడు లేడు అని ఒక విధమైనటువంటి హాస్యాస్పదానికి గురి అవుతున్నారు.
ఫ్రమ్ ది వరల్డ్లీ పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ వ్యూ, ఫ్రమ్ ది సైంటిఫిక్ పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ వ్యూ, వీ ఫీల్ దట్ దేర్ ఇస్ సన్ మూన్ సెపరేట్లీ ప్రెసెంట్, మ్యాన్ రీచెస్ దేర్ అండ్ కమ్స్ బ్యాక్ ఫ్రమ్ ద మూన్.
చంద్రుడనగా కేవలం మనకు కనిపించేటువంటి యొక్క భూమిలోని చిన్న భాగం కాదు.
మూన్ ఈజ్ నాట్ ద వన్ దట్ యు సీ యాజ్ అ స్మాల్ ఫ్రాక్షన్.
చంద్రుడనగా మన యొక్క హృదయంలో కలిగించేటువంటి అంతర్భూతమైన మనోతత్వమే.
మూన్ మెంట్ ఆల్ దట్ మెంటల్ ఇంప్లికేషన్స్ ఇన్ అవర్ హార్ట్.
చక్షో సూర్యోజాయత, మన యొక్క నేత్రములయందు సూర్య తేజస్సు ఉంటుండాలి.
దేర్ ఇస్ ఎఫల్జెన్స్ ఇన్ అవర్ ఐస్ ఆఫ్
ఈ సూర్య తేజస్సు వలననే అనేకత్వమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వాన్ని మనం చూడగలుగుతున్నాం.
త్రూ ది ఎఫల్జెస్ ఆఫ్ సన్ కంటైన్ ఇన్ ది ఐ వీఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు సీ డివినిటీ ఎవ్రీవేర్.
దీని యొక్క ప్రభావము, దీని యొక్క పరిశక్తి ఇట్టిది అట్టిదని ఎవరు కూడా నిర్ణయించలేరు.
ది ఇంపాక్ట్, ది ఎఫెక్ట్ అండ్ ద పవర్ నో వన్ కెన్ డిస్క్రైబ్ దిస్ వే ఆర్ దట్.
హాఫ్ ఇంచ్ ఒక అరించిలో ఉండినటువంటి నేత్రమైనప్పటికీ,
ద ఐ విచ్ ఇస్ జస్ట్ హాఫ్ ఎన్ ఇంచ్,
క్రోర్స్ ఆఫ్ మైల్స్ కోట్ల మైళ్ళ దూరంలో ఉన్నటువంటి నక్షత్రాన్ని చూడగలుగుతుండాలి.
హీ ఈజ్ ఏబుల్ టు సీ గెలాక్సీ ఆఫ్ స్టార్ ఫార్ డిస్టెంట్ క్రోర్స్ ఆఫ్ మైల్స్.
ఈ శక్తి ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చింది?
వేర్ ఫ్రమ్ హ్యాస్ హి గాట్ ద పవర్?
ఆ సూర్యుడే అయిపోతే, ఆ సూర్యశక్తి ఇందులో ప్రవేశించినట్టయితే దీనిని ఆ సూర్యుడే చూడగలుగుతుంది. రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఉంటుండాలి.
హౌఎవర్ బిట్వీన్ దీస్ టూ ఆర్ ప్రెసెంట్ రియాక్షన్, రిఫ్లెక్షన్ అండ్ రిసౌండ్.
And that was the next clip, and I think Swami is pretty much continuing with the idea of the importance of karma and kartavyam, where Swami went on to say that the body is in the realm where it is bound by time and duty, and to sanctify the body, perform pure actions and use time meaningfully. So Swami is correlating actions and time, where time is a reality. There is a period of time that you need to live through, and there is no escape but to fill that with time. So the question is, how do you make the time meaningful through the actions that you perform?
Right.
That Swami is talking about, and of course Swami is telling how action is completely inevitable. Even when you're idle, you're actually doing enormous number of actions. And Swami is referring to this thing of, you know, when you're sleeping, your heart is beating, there is the blood flow happening and all of that. Pretty similar to, I mean, the whole of Bhagavad Gita is about that, where he says that you cannot escape action. You know, even when you're sitting idle, you are performing action. And even that will count as action. Even though you're sitting quietly, inaction also is counted as action. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what sort of action should you do, and with what attitude should the action be done?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita, where you're taught to fill time with action in the right manner with the right attitude.
Right. Also, this one very interesting inquiry that Swami is speaking about. that how so many of, like, although you may be appearing to be in action, that is, you have initiated a certain action in your body by eating, however, the entire process is like kind of below your consciousness. You're not actually actively participating in the process of digestion. It happens all by itself. Circulation happens all by itself. Sleep and all that. These are many of the things that they are part of our existence, but we have absolutely no control. Yeah, right. We don't intend it. Nothing of that sort. Mm. But it's very interesting to see that, you know, how little of what goes on with us at such an intimate level. Like, we are not masters of that.
Mm.
We are not even aware, conscious of how it happens. And the same goes on even for mental processes.
Mm.
You know, many of us, we cannot account for why we perform certain actions.
Like,
because they happen really almost of their own volition. Like, you ask a person, like, say, 6 months down the line, would we have acted differently? Most of the time, I think the answer would be yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's very, many of these things, they are like, they take place at a very unconscious or subconscious kind of level. And that's one very interesting thing, that some action is voluntary, while I think Swami is very liberal in saying other action, but it's like so many, most of the other actions are, they take place at a very involuntary level. So much for us, you know, taking credit or, you know, assigning blame or whatever for much of what we do.
Right?
Because, as Swami says, one of the most important things that we lack is self-awareness. Like, that awareness of, like, who we are and why do we act the way we act, why do we say the things we say, that we say. Many of us have absolutely no idea of where it is coming from. Right? And it's very important. I think that is the whole idea of the purpose of sitting for meditation, is to get more and more aware of, you know, what is happening even inside you. Right?
Exactly. In fact, Swami ends the clip with that when he's talking about the sages and all of that. And their nature. He was saying that these are the people who actually took the time to discover all of these and given it. And we're talking about involuntariness. Swami's, I think it was a very beautiful connection that Swami gave, that there are a lot of activities which happen involuntarily, especially something like the heart beating. The heart beating normally, the heart beating abnormally too.
Mm.
You know, you don't have control over both.
Mm.
You neither have control over the smooth functioning of the heart, or if it skips a beat, or if it starts malfunctioning, even that you don't have control over. And Swami is referring to that as adi daivikam. Anything which is absolutely beyond your control,
right?
You see it as, you know, in regular parlance we would say divine will or destiny or whatever you call that. In fact, when there was this debate in our class when it came up, whether there is free will or there is destiny. So one of the teachers raised this very point. He said, we could debate till the cows come home and we might not come to a conclusion. But so much happens within the body, which we call my body, and, you know, I act through this body, you have no control over. And one of the examples, very classic examples, is one of the types of cancers which come in the human blood. The aberration which causes the cancer is absolutely minute. You know, in the gene, they say the fourth amino acid, something, there's a wrong link, or whatever it is, it's very, very minuscule. And that causes the cancer, which can kill the person in a very short time, maybe 3 months to 3 weeks also.
Mm.
He says, you don't have the ability to stop that from happening in one corner in your body.
Right.
You know, how much control do you have even over what you call yourself? Right? So I thought, he said, I mean, then where does will come? You know, you're only talking about human will in things which are so gross in nature. I can lift my hand. You know, I can go where I want to. I can wear what I want to. That is something which is so very gross compared to the many 100 million things which happen in your body, which you have no control over. And add to that the 100 million things which happen around you, which you absolutely have no control over. As you're saying, even when you're interacting with another person, you don't have control over what you say, what you think, how do you react when you hear a certain word or hear a certain comment or remark. Absolutely no control over all of that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this comes to one point I think we had discussed earlier, you know, that coming to the skills and talents that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And why Swami keeps saying that the best use of those, or what is the best use of those skills and talents? Following that train of thought which you started, mm-hmm. right? So, if you look at it, the events of life are themselves very so chaotic, right? That it is indeed a miracle that somebody who is born with a certain skill or a talent is actually able to fructify or consummate that
mm-hmm.
talent. Right, there are so many things that need to fall in place.
Right,
so many right people that you need to meet in order to get to where you are. Right? And that is something that maybe when you're intoxicated with that feeling of achievement or the
right.
feeling of success, is something you would not want to acknowledge. Right.
Mm.
In fact, there is a study that was conducted as to how the most successful people, they are not willing to act. Accept or admit the factor of luck that has played a role in their success.
Mm.
And that is a very important thing that we must acknowledge that a lot of things. Therefore, we owe a debt of gratitude to a lot of, people in our lives. We met the right teachers or we met the right coaches and we got to where we are. Right? And therefore a whole debt of gratitude we owe to society itself. Right. And finally, to God Himself, right, that all of these have had. So with that, when that kind of humility, otherwise we are always, with the attitude that we have is, this is something that is my possession, right, and I have developed it, and I have come to this particular position where I am. But if we understand as, Swami is so nicely pointing out that many of these processes are completely unintended, right, it's like it happens, we do not know how, and Swami is giving the answer. He says that is Adidaivikam. Right, it is through an Adidaivik process, in fact, that you completely land up exactly where you are today. Right, and why are you there in that case? Right, and the only right answer when you realize that all this has happened may not be entirely of your volition, you realize that basically it is there for you to offer it back to that society, to that destiny which has landed you there. And that's a very deep thought, that this is how it happens, right? So we have got to acknowledge it, and Swami Himself is stating over here that all of this is happening by the power of the divine power, the Adidaivikam.
Right. I mean, the number of combinations and permutations that need to fall in place.
Exactly.
Even for, let's say, an embryo to finally end up as an old man and pass away in peace, the amount of things that have to fall in place is innumerable.
Yes.
Right?
It's
in fact, there's one forward which is going around now. It's a very beautiful short video about what happened in one of the national parks in United States.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you had the opportunity to see that, where there's this huge national park, and it was a declining natural reserve, where they had a lot of, I think, particular species of moose was there in plenty. But there was nothing other than that. The other wildlife was not there. And they started off by introducing a pack of wolves in that national park. And the amount of change only that has brought in is phenomenal. And it all starts with these wolves starting to, hunt down these, these deers which are there. And automatically, the deers get confined to a certain area. So the plants start flourishing in the remaining area. Then you start getting fruits and berries. The birds start coming in.
Oh.
And with the birds, the other species come in. The bears start coming in. The beavers start coming in. The moment the beavers come, they start making the dams. The rivers start flowing in course.
Mm.
So he says in a matter of few decades, the whole thing is back to a very beautiful ecosystem with all its balance.
Oh, okay.
I mean, when you look at that, you're introducing a concept of, a set of predators into a peaceful environment. Right? And that has caused so much balance.
Harmony.
Right? So when you really look at that, and when you go through life, you realize that every person who told you that you can't do something, every person who told you that, you're not capable of this, or every person who tried to place obstacles in what you're trying to do, all of them actually contributed to what you are now.
Mm.
We don't realize that. We think that we overcame them and that's why we are where we are. But maybe sometimes, all of those people who, slowed down our pace did the best they could for us in that manner.
Yeah, and so the other two dimensions. So we spoke about Adidaivikam, and Swami introduces us to Adi Bhautikam and Adi Atmakam. So Adi Atmakam, which Professor Anil Kumar has using Sandhi, as he calls it Adi Atmakam. So Adi Bhautikam, as Swami says, is related to the body, and Adhyatmikam is related to the mind. So generally we tend to think, correlate Adhyatmikam as spirituality, but in this context it is speaking about relating to the mind. And in fact, the general context in which we speak about Adi Devikam, Adi Bhautikam and Adhyatmakam, mm-hmm. is when we talk about the kind of sorrows, travails or troubles that a human being undergoes.
Mm-hmm.
So the Indian scriptures, they classify them as these. Adi Bhautikam is where are the troubles that arise from the body itself, like the mm-hmm. disease or pain, etc., that arises at the level of the body. And then we have Adhyatmikam, which is like it's related to the mind. So the mental struggles that we undergo, you know, mm-hmm. the emotional ups and downs. So that is categorized as Adhyatmikam. And then we have Adidaivikam, which can only be called as like what we call in law as, you know, the force acts of God, you know, the force measure. So in that sense, these are like from outside, so-called outside the physical realm, they attack a person,
right?
Like the natural calamities or tragedies that befall. So these are from completely outside of these two categories, right? And so Swami is relating how for the Adi Bhautikam, as we learnt in the last few segments, that it is the Virata who is the witness, or is the aspect of the Lord that is present at that physical space. And Adhyatmikam is the Hiranyagarbha, and for Adi Daivikam, we have the Avyakrita, that is the presiding aspect of divinity, right?
Mm.
And so Swami says that in these states, we undergo, we perform certain actions, and then we experience like different events that happen, right? So this is a nice kind of classification that Swami gives over here.
Right. And also, you know, Swami connects it again going forward. He says about the sages who renounced everything in the pursuit of trying to obtain bliss. I think, you know, most of what Swami said about the Adi Daivikam aspect, where things are beyond your control. In fact, even Adi Bhautikam, there's a lot of things which are very limited in our control. You know, you have control over what you do, but you don't have control over the response to what you do, you know, which is coming from others. So even in the physical realm, what you have in your control is very, very less. And that's why Swami would say that, you know, you derive your satisfaction from action, but don't derive it from the results of your action. Because even though that is in the physical plane, that's actually beyond you.
Right.
So literally the idea of bliss in this whole thing is pretty much when you understand where each one of these stands, how much is there really in your control, I think automatically that will lead to a certain amount of peace and bliss. Because from the explanation that Swami has given, there is so very little in our control, and we fret and fume so much, you know, just with that much in our control, right?
And yeah, so precisely, so which is why the sages, I think, they were prompted to inquire, you know, so once they realize the absurdity of the world that they live in, right, they're prompted therefore to break through that dilemma and see like what's behind that.
Right.
Right, and which is why we see in the Purusha Suktam, they say, you know, Vedahamitam Purusham Mahantam Aditya Varnam Tamasah Parastat. So actually they recognize that there is some, we are surrounded literally by darkness, and
right.
there is something that has to be pierced in order to see the, you know, the light that lies behind. Right. So again, so Swami says that, you know, we should understand a lot of the aphorisms or the utterances of these sages in the right context, and, you know, not interpret them as literally as we would. Say something like Swami gives the example of Chandrama Manaso Jata Chaksho Suryo Jayata, and there's a very common, a very silly argument that people make, you know, and they say that what do you mean by, you know, saying something like this?
Or the sun, eyes have come from the sun.
Yeah, and yes, so Swami says that you must understand that we are talking about at a very abstract level of the principle.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the mind, Swami says this Swami used to speak about during Shivaratri. There's a very close connection between the mind and the moon. And not in the sense of the moon effects, you know, that it has that same characteristic as the moon does of waning and waxing, right? So we see that the mind is at the full power during the daytime, and then the powers recede. And as the Upanishads have shown us, that how the mind, the senses, everything recedes. So it has that aspect of the moon. The mind and moon are similar in that sense. And likewise, when we look at the sun, so Swami says that Chakshos Suryo Ajayata. And here Swami is speaking about the fire principle, or the principle that has the eyes see what they see. Mm-hmm. You know, so Swami says that is you got to understand that you have to go down to the principle that is present, and that principle is given the name of the moon or the sun.
Right. And, you know, going back to this thing of Swami saying Chaksho Suryo Ajayata, Swami would explain this in this manner also. You know, the ability to see the sun comes from the fact that the sun is giving you the light to see it.
Mm.
Right? So Swami would say that is how you say that to be able to see an object, that object itself is the source of your sight.
Right.
That it permits you to be seen. And when you're talking about the sun, It has a big role in allowing you to see a lot of things, because scientifically that's what it is. When you see an object, it is nothing but the reflection of light from that object.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, Swami would say that, you know, all sight comes from sun.
Right.
And in the absence of that light, you can't see anything, even if it is right in front of you.
And not only that, the animating energy, ultimately the plants or whatever that we consume in order to derive our energy that runs our body, ultimately comes from the sun. Right, so
right.
The entire cycle has a very strong dependence on the sun itself. Mm. So in that sense, that is also the animating principle.
Yeah? True.
So that is why, as you were saying, you know, it is that which is seen and that which also has a seat. So that is why, you know, the sages would worship the sun itself as a manifestation of God.
Right.
So throughout the Vedas, the Upanishads, if there is one deity that is common, right from Rig Veda down to the Yajur Veda, you will see that it is a sun which is almost constantly worshipped. Even finally in the Atharva Veda, the mantras, you will find a lot of mantras that are addressed to the sun. Mm. Whereas you will see on the way, you know, from the Rig Veda, many of the devatas, they do not find a mention later.
Okay.
Right. So, but the sun is one, deity that is praised throughout.
Right.
For example, we have the deity in Rig Veda, we have a deity called Manyu.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, but you'll, after the Rigvedic period kind of is over, you'll never find mention of that. And the closest cognate of that would be Rudra.
Right. Okay.
The deity called Rudra, which we later then address as Shiva, etc. Mm. Right. So, but the sun principle is there, right from the Rig Veda down to the Atharva Veda.
Right.
It's a very interesting that is how important the sun is in our scriptures, and follows from the fact that the sun is very, very, present in our daily lives.
Right.
It's a nod to that fact.
Right. And even when Swami speaks about this Manaso Jata, Chandrama Manaso Jata, Swami would often give this comparison, just like how the moon is not self-luminescent. It reflects the light of the sun. Swami would say the same is the case with the mind too. The human mind is not self-luminescent. It cannot function on its own.
Yes.
It reflects the brilliance of the Atman.
Right.
So I think very early, even in the Rig Veda and all of these things, they went beyond the idea that the sun that we're worshipping is the physical sun. They were talking about an entity which was self-luminescent, which can be seen because it allows itself to be seen.
Mm.
And it is much beyond that what you actually see it. Everything operates under its care and under its umbrella. But it only... you can see as much of it as it allows itself to be seen, which pretty much could become the perfect description of God itself.
Yes.
So I think very soon this correlation between the mind and the moon, the Atma and the sun and the Supreme Divinity
right.
was made. I think that is why the need to drop sun as a deity was never there in the Vedas.
Mm.
It was always in context and always relevant.
Right.
And when talking about this Chandrama and the mind, Swami would say this, especially every Shivratri, that you know, as the moon is waxing, the role the mind plays in your decisions actually reduces. And that's why on the day of Shivratri, especially that particular Shivratri, it's the best time to dwell on any kind of spiritual activity. In fact, if you look at even many of the Indian traditions that we do, there would be very, very small things like you're not allowed to do any transaction after it becomes dark. Right? That was something which they used to tell us. Because it's like morning time when the sun is bright, your intelligence is at its peak. See, even as the day ends and your night goes, they would say, don't pay any money. Don't buy anything after, you know, nightfall. Don't do certain things after nightfall. It only means that those are the times when your intelligence is actually a little lower than it should be. And important decisions are better made in the morning time when you can think clearly.
Right.
And of course, Swami is referring to this Tejasa, the brightness of fire, and that as relating to God. And I think, was it the same name that Swami gave to Hiranyagarbha, right? Hiranyagarbha, Swami said, is also called Tejasa.
No, so Tejasa in the Mandukya Upanishad, so Tejasa is the name that is given to the dream state.
Right.
And correlating to that, we have the golden or the glowing Hiranyagarbha. So Tejasa is essentially, as we said, no, it is the brightness that is associated with the dream state.
Dream state.
So as coming back to this, the importance of the mind, Swami has spoken about this, the effect that the mind has is how important the mind is in spirituality. Like Swami used to say that manayeva manushanam karanam bandha moksha. He used to simplify that by giving an allegory of the mind as a key. So you turn it right and you unlocked, right? And then if you turn it to the left, you have locked. So in the sense that how bound you are to the world depends on the mind itself, like how you turn the mind. And therefore it is very, when you speak about the importance of Shivratri, as you said, no, so the intelligence has to take over. Among the
The buddhi,
manobuddhi chitta ahankara, it is very important for the buddhi aspect, and this we have seen in the previous discussions in the Upanishads also, that we have to keep nurturing buddhi. And perhaps one of the best ways that we can see is by listening to Bhagavan's discourses and be directed towards the readings of the Upanishads. Because the Upanishads, as we can see, they're taking us completely, they first make us aware of how as a person, like we tend to have so many reactions that belong to an individual. Right? And I think Swami speaks, just as beginning to speak about that, when he says reflection, reaction, resound. So most of our existence is like stimulus reaction. Right? And how to go beyond that, and that is where the buddhi comes into play. And so all the Upanishads are doing is to going on enable the effect of the buddhi over the other aspects of the mind, because it's only then the climb actually begins. Otherwise you're always stuck at that levels of this is my ego principle, and this is my body, this is my mind, and that entire identification with the psyche. And that is where the beautiful message of the Upanishads is very, very vital.
And this particular section that we heard today, it goes through different levels of that understanding. Because one thing, Swami started off with the difference between dream and the reality, where he was saying that reality is defined by these four aspects of time, task, cause and duty. And then he said that as long as you're in this frame of reference, you need to adhere to all of these things. So then Swami went on to say that you actually don't have the choice. Much of it happens without your volition. And Swami went on to speak about the Adi Daivikam aspect. So at one point Swami is talking about the importance of karma, of what you do and ensure that you do the right thing. In the next moment Swami is saying that there's a lot of things, karma, which happens without your knowledge. And I think it's pretty much similar to once somebody was talking about the Gita, was saying that this is the question that Arjuna asks Krishna at some time in the Gita. He says, you say I am being driven by my vasanas. And you say that there's whatever choice I make, whatever I speak, whatever profession I take, all of that is driven by my past vasanas. Then what am I to do? Like, why are you educating me now if everything is out of my control?
Hmm.
So apparently Krishna says that at every moment you have a choice to do the right or to do the wrong. That choice is definitely there.
Hmm.
Even though much of it is beyond your control, that momentary choice is there for you.
Hmm.
And the whole idea is to make that choice constantly at every moment and unfailingly.
Right.
And that is what actually enables your, what you're talking about, the buddhi aspect. That what empowers and enables that to start ruling the rest of
Correct.
Your actions and decisions.
Yes.
Right. So I think we'll have to end with that. Dear listeners, we'll conclude the program here. We'll continue next week. We humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet, and thank you all for joining us. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, the Vahini Satsang. Do join us next week for the continuation of this discourse. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.